You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
Welcome to the Tom Hartman Program. I'm Mike Papantonio, sitting in for Tom. Today I have Cliff Schechter with me. I've got Dean Baker. See, he's going to be talking about CEO plan for Social Security, which is basically to destroy it. Very interesting conversation we're going to have with her. Alternate Stephen Rosenfeld's going to be with us to talk about the GOP's war on voting rights and much more. I want to lead this by telling you, several years ago, I would show up as one of the few liberals willing to appear on those Fox TV segments where there'd be four crazy-eyed neo-nuts on the other side of the table and me on one side of the table. In a weird kind of way, it was fun. I remember being opposite a way crazy radio talking head guy named Mike Gallagher. He was shouting at me, as they often do when I sometimes disagree with everything they have to say. And while he was shouting, I could swear, not making this, I could swear I heard him whining. It was a sound not much different from a sound you might expect from a colicky baby. Very weirded me out there for a minute. I try not to shout back in those talking head segments because you can't think clearly when you're shouting back. Instead, I made a simple proposal. I told Gallagher that the fringe lockstep conservative types should consider organizing a support group for the chronically whiny conservatives. I told him that it was an illness that was working on him. I envisioned a 12-step program designed to help pundits like him become less whiny and more substantive as they blabber their crazy talk day to day. At one point, he stopped shouting, and I wasn't sure whether he'd become apoplectic or maybe he actually believed what I was saying that I was taking seriously. But I swear I heard almost a gurgling childlike whine coming out of his angry face. The conservative pundit list of favorite whines is way too long to cover in this segment. But here's the 10,000-foot picture that we get every day. This is the 10,000-foot picture of what I get constantly when I'm the other side of that table with a conservative. It is this. Liberals hate America because liberals are critical of Republican buffoons. And when we're critical of Republican buffoons, we hate America. Liberals are socialists because we believe that a disabled mother with two children should receive help from the government. And because of that, we're socialist. Liberals are weak because we object to an Iraq war that was based on a pure Dick Cheney lie about weapons of mass destruction. No question, it was a lie, but we're weak because we question that kind of lie. Or how about this one? Liberals are being unfair when they criticize Republicans for allowing 3,000 Americans to be murdered on 9/11 because Republican leadership was so damn brain dead and incompetent that they never read what they were supposed to be doing. Or how about this? Liberals complain too much that George Bush Republicans totally decimated the American economy in their time in office. Okay, we get it. The truth is that it's impossible for neo-nuts to talk substance after 8 years of an economy meltdown, after an Iraqi desert lie, a string of scandals ranging from mortgage scams to stock market corruption, and incompetence, just pure, absolute, lazy, brain-dead incompetence that resulted in the murder of 3,000 Americans on American soil. Why bring up substance like that when why even talk substance like that if you're Republican? It's too scary. So professionals who have for years studied the personality traits of whiny conservatives tell us that their whining is actually an avoidance protective mechanism used to block out reality. That's not Mike Papantonio saying that in 2012. They've done studies on this. Interesting personality study, for example, just one of them. In 1960, a Stanford psychology professor by the name of Jack Block began following the personality development of 100 children from kindergarten to adulthood. His team concluded many things about these children's personalities as they evolve, but among those many conclusions was this. The whiniest of the whiny kindergartners who grew up to become, time after time, when they did the numbers, they followed them, psychologists described them as they became adults as rigidly conservative. And that was just a nice way of saying that they later life became teabaggers or Republicans. Also, the study showed that they were fearful. They were fearful little tykes who grew up to be fearful grown-up tykes. Reading excerpts from that study has given me a good perspective about all those conservative political whiners that I confront almost daily, because I laugh just a little bit inside when I picture them in toddlers' Oshkosh overalls, still playing in the sandbox. Still red-faced, still screaming like a colicky baby because life isn't going the way they think it should. Because too much of life terrifies the now adult tyke. Technology is a wonderful thing. PET scans, MRI scans, CT scans have helped us learn a lot about how different psychological brain structure actually impacts how people view the world from an ideology standpoint. For example, the University College of London found dramatic structural differences in the brains between liberals and conservatives. Here's what they describe. Conservatives have a consistently large amygdala, which is the fear center of the brain. It's always bigger for the conservative. The bigger the amygdala, the more terrified people have a tendency to be. That helped the University College of London draw conclusions about how conservatives were terrified of change, terrified of new ideas, terrified of different people, terrified of different cultures. It makes conservatives far less capable of adaptation because, well, they're damn well afraid of everything. That's why they want more guns. That's why people of different faith and different skin color scare the hell out of conservatives. They can't help it. There's also the Dunning-Kruger study that came out of Cornell University that, when distilled to the basics, it shows most of the time conservatives who are afraid, they're afraid of change, those conservatives have a metaphysical inability to realize or admit that they're wrong. They can't help it. It's another type of adaptation that's a protective mechanism like a childlike whine. But here's where Dunning-Kruger gets really interesting. The protective mechanism most used by the cohort in the Dunning-Kruger study was that the way that terrified group avoids their own poor judgment is simply to put their lack of knowledge, ignore their lack of knowledge by creating for themselves this illusory, wholly inaccurate aura of superiority, where they rate their own ability way above the average person, they rate their insight way above the average person, and when their competency is at test, they use that as a protective mechanism. Simply put, if I were to drill down, simply put, they're often too stupid to know they're stupid. That's what you can conclude from that study. I'm Mike Papantonio, in for Tom Hartman, 866-987-8466. Let's have some fun today. I'm going to be back. When we come back, I'll have Cliff Schechter. We'll start taking your calls. There's a lot to talk about, so stay with me. Follow me at Twitter at Ring of Fire Radio. Let me know what you're thinking. Just send me those tweets. I can take that. I can figure out what you want to talk about. I'm Mike Papantonio, in for Tom Hartman. We'll be right back.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
I'm in for Tom Hartman. I'm Mike Papantonio. Give me a call, 866-987-8466. We'll be right back.
They both have cause. They both have cause my heart to bleed.
Welcome back to the Tom Hartman Program. It is media for the rest of us. I'm Mike Papantonio, sitting in for Tom Hartman. On today's show, Cliff Schechter, he's with me now, but I'm going to have Dean Baker They're going to be co-director of the Center for Economic and Policy Research. Is going to talk about the CEO plans nationally to steal Social Security. You're going to have alternate contributor Stephen Rosenfeld, all-around smart guy, talking about GOP's war on voting rights. Adele Stan, Washington correspondent for Alternate, going to talk about the right trying to drum up hate to defeat Obama. And John Amato, friend from Crooks and Liars, he's going to talk about whether or not we can finally force the media to talk about Romney's damn tax returns. And then Ben Gordon's going to tell us about the dangers of metal-on-metal implants and how they're poisoning people. Cliff, let me ask you, you've written plenty on the Dunning-Kruger study, on these studies that have been done. You know, this is not just made-up stuff. These are epidemiological quality studies.
Yeah, they are. I mean, today's right-wingers, it's different. We're not talking about even conservative from 30 years ago at this point, or let's call them sort of moderate-ish conservatives. We're talking about the radicals, the birchers who've taken over. They're fearful. You talked about the studies. Those are obvious. And they don't want to accept anything that contradicts what they believe. And the scary thing is you see this playing out now. Yesterday, I mean, just to bring it to what's going on right now, yesterday, during, you know, we had a lot of primary elections, and there was an amendment passed in Missouri where now parents and children can choose to opt out of any teaching in public school they say violates their religion. So if your religion doesn't like fractions, for example, you don't have to learn fractions, I guess. I don't know. I mean, Louisiana, they've got
fractions
right now
are scary, yeah.
Jindal, that are teaching people that dinosaurs and humans lived side by side, that fire-breathing dragons existed, that slaves in the Old South were treated well. Oh, and guess what else? The Ku Klux Klan was a force of good at times.
Oh, they're also teaching in Louisiana that the Loch Ness Monster is alive and well. And
that's
the Loch Ness...
Right. Dragons and the dinosaurs and people. I mean, this is ridiculous. But
well, how about this, Cliff? Cliff, how about this? Right online with exactly what Dunning-Kruger's talking about here. Sometimes people are too stupid to know they're stupid. Now, that Dunning-Kruger didn't say that, but by God, I've read it. That's what I conclude. Sometimes people are too stupid to know they're stupid. So in Texas now, what we have is part of the Republican charter, their platform. And I go look. I'm not making this up. They want to remove critical thinking. They want to remove critical thinking from their school textbooks. And that doesn't just affect Texas. That affects everybody because we get these Texas textbooks everywhere. They think critical thinking causes kids to be rebellious, causes kids to question authority, and they want to end critical thinking. This is the very thing that we all came up with. They don't think it's a good idea because they think it breeds rebellion. Couldn't happen in a better place. Texas, it's no surprise. You're next going to see it in Alabama. You're going to see it in Mississippi. You're going to see it in Louisiana. You're going to see it everywhere where there's a Republican governor with a Republican state legislature.
Right. And as you just said, and we're talking about Missouri yesterday, Louisiana now. This is going on, and it's going on. It's based on exactly the studies you're talking about. It's based on fearful people. It's based on people that don't want to accept science and reality. And as you said, They're too dumb to know they're dumb. So this all makes sense. They're willing to take someone else's word for it. And God forbid anybody actually ask any questions along the way. And we're all going to suffer as we head way back to being a developing country because of people like this.
Well, Dunning-Kruger, I think the interesting thing about Dunning-Kruger is they actually explore what the mechanisms are. It's very interesting. One of the mechanisms is the least, if you take a crowd of people, and you say, okay, in the crowd, here's the conservative mind. The conservative mind will always act like they know more than everybody, even given information that completely runs contrary to what they're being shown. They could be shown on black and white, and they will ignore that reality and actually create this adaptation that is an illusory superiority. Now, again, take a look at this stuff. And, you know, mainstream media here, again, they don't talk about it. They think, oh, well, you know, you can't talk about the fact that people are different. People are different. The reason that what made me think about this, Cliff, is yesterday on Tom's show, I had people saying, well, you know, don't we need to take more time and talk to people at the water cooler? No, we don't, because you can talk all day, and it's not going to change their mind. And it's not just these studies. Chris Mooney, as you know, did an incredible job. It's called The Republican Brain. And it will scare the hell out of you when you read it, because he says the people he's writing about are now in charge of things like educating our children. They're now in charge of making political policy decisions for all of us. They're now in charge of health care decisions. They're in charge of our bodies and our minds. And Chris Mooney, you know, I'm sure you followed him. He's brilliant.
Sure.
Brilliant writer. In this new book, The Republican Mind, lays it all out.
Right. And I mean, again, you pointed out, and then it makes it that it's really no accident what's going on over the last 6, 8, 10 more, you know, longer years, because science and facts and common sense, none of that matters anymore. So if you've done something that's failed again and again economically, if you think that massively deregulating the economy is a brilliant idea, these guys just keep arguing for more of it.
Yeah.
You know, and obviously if you've got the most regressive social policies that don't work, they'll claim that's working. If the states that are pushing this, that won't teach about birth control and the rest, of course, are the ones that end up having the highest rates of teenage pregnancy.
Right.
They just ignore that.
Let me close this quickly. The amygdala, it was something they can actually see on a PET scan. They can see it on a CT scan. They say there's something different structurally. And if it's a fear center, what they're saying is we start understanding why the conservative may be so damned afraid of everything. They can't help it. And so when people are afraid, they don't think rationally. They can't figure things out because they're too afraid to figure out the truth. 866-987-8466. I'm Mike Papantonio, sitting in for Tom Hartman. We'll be right back.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Call 866-987-THOM.
I'm Mike Papantonio, sitting in for Tom Hartman. Follow me on Twitter at Ring of Fire Radio. Let me know what you're thinking. Welcome back to the Tom Hartman Program. I'm Mike Papantonio, standing in for Tom Hartman. It is where despair is not an option. Look, I got many of the same people who brought this economy to its knees just a few years ago. They're now devising a plan that's supposed to get the budget and the economy back in a forward path. In other words, the same people who burned it down say, hey, I have an idea. Do it my way, Mr. President. As a matter of fact, they're already meeting with closed door meetings where they're saying they should be followed in how we're going to resurrect the economy that they burned down. Dean Baker is the co-director of the Center for Economic and Policy Research, contributor for truthout.org. Dean, did I get that right? Is that going on in this country right now? We have the CEOs who burned us down now saying they're here to help us.
Yeah, that's pretty much the story. And what's interesting, you know, I got this, you know, you hear all sorts of stories, but there's a very nice piece in Washington Post by Stephen Perlstein, who's a good columnist there. He's been there for years and years as a reporter for years and been columnist about 5 or 6 years. And he was writing this up. I mean, frankly, he views it positively. He's saying, you know, here are these CEOs with business experience, and they're trying to cook up a plan that's going to get the budget in order. And, you know, he sees that as a good thing. But in any case, you know, there are...
Well, what did he miss about the fact that some of the same names that were involved in everything from the mortgage scam to derivatives to synthetic scam to swap scams, these are the same people who burned us down.
Well, certainly many of them, the idea... Well, they've created this idea that somehow we have this out-of-control budget, that the big problem is that our budget is out of control, and that's really where all the problems stem from. And it's totally absurd, I mean, on its face. We did not have big budget deficits until the economy collapsed. And the fact that we have big budget deficits today is a good thing, because if we didn't, we'd have even more unemployment.
Even in the collapse, Dean, most of the money moved to the top 1%. So they're saying, well, we have the money now, so let's go ahead and start cutting the bottom 99% some more on things like Social Security and Medicare. Is that about what the plan is?
Well, a big chunk of that will come out of Social Security and Medicare. You know, in fairness, they are also talking about having some cuts to the military budget, and they are talking about having some tax increases, but they are talking about very substantial cuts to Social Security and Medicare. And, you know, these are people that have been hit, you know, by the collapse of the housing market. They've been hit by seeing their 401ks, and so far as they had anything there, fall off. Many people are unemployed now, you know, in their last working years. and now we're going to be looking to take away their Social Security and cut back their Medicare. I mean, that seems kind of far-fetched.
Tell us what the numbers mean on these kind of cutbacks. What does it mean for people listening to this program?
Well, typical Social Security benefits about $1,200 a month. And one of the most commonly proposed ideas would be to reduce the annual cost of living adjustment. And that seems small. It's going to seem small, but it'll add up over time so that after 10 years, people will be looking at benefits that are about 3% less. After 20 years, about 6% less. And if people are getting benefits for 30 years, they'll be looking at benefits that are about 9% less than under current law. They're also talking about raising the age of Social Security, not Social Security eligibility, Medicare eligibility, 67. So we have a lot of people, of course, struggling to make it to 65 when they can first qualify for Medicare. These proposals would have them wait another 2 years.
So you have the Wall Street swap barons that have taken the money and they've run. Okay, they're gone. You have people like Erskine Bowles, for example. His name comes up here, J.P. Morgan. Was it J.P. Morgan?
Morgan Stanley.
Morgan Stanley, excuse me. Okay, so Morgan Stanley. Now, my memory is that when Morgan Stanley burned their company down by just bad leadership, by stupid decisions, by betting on something was just completely crazy, the taxpayers came back in and bailed them out in 2008. We saved their company. And this is a guy who says the people who saved the company, the taxpayers who saved the company, we want to cut their Social Security and Medicare now because we made our money.
That's the basic story. I mean, Morgan Stanley was in line to go under. You know, if you recall a set of events, Bear Stearns, one of the big investment banks, had gone under in March.
Right.
Lehman had gone under in September. And there's basically a run on Morgan Stanley and Goldman Sachs and Merrill Lynch. Merrill Lynch got taken over by Bank of America. There was no one to take over the other two, Morgan Stanley and Goldman Sachs, and in order to prevent them from basically going under, Ben Bernanke, on an emergency basis, allowed them to become bank holding companies, which meant that the Fed and the Federal Deposit Insurance Corporation could stand behind them, because as freestanding investment banks, they had no authority to do that.
This is an administration that has not been willing to stand up to Wall Street. There's no other way to put it. You know, again, every time I talk about the fact we have to, Obama has to win this election, no question. But we can't be blind to the fact that they allowed trillions of dollars to be stolen from mom and pop investors, pension programs. We knew how they were stealing it. Secret here. I mean, you know, even in the private sector where you do what I do, where you go after these corporations and you have to sue them for various things, we figured it out. Certainly Justice Department's figured out that these people are criminals and they haven't even taken the first step to indict any of them. Some of these people are directly that you're talking about. Some of these people in this Stephen Pearlstein story that you're talking about, where Stephen Pearlstein says, oh, good, they're here to help us. These are people that were they're completely bundled up with these fraud stories.
Well, you know, what individuals knew what when, I can't really say. But, you know, the basic story here is we know that there were huge numbers of fraudulent mortgages that were packaged into mortgage-backed securities and resold all over the world. And, you know, the question is, you know, someone knew that these were fraudulent securities, fraudulent mortgages, and, you know, they at the very least looked the other way.
Well, don't we know more than that, though, Dean? Don't we know that Goldman Sachs was actually telling an investor that they should buy this synthetic garbage? They should buy the swap garbage, the CDO garbage. And at the same way they're telling them that, while they were telling them that, Goldman Sachs was actually betting on the fact that all this garbage they were selling was going to fail and they'd be paid by the insurance company for the failure. This is the leadership that Obama is counting on to pull us out of the economy, really?
Yeah, well, it wouldn't be my leadership, but no, that's the basic story. I mean, they you know, you had Goldman Sachs that was betting against derivative instruments that they were pushing on their customers. And, of course, in that particular case, they did end up paying a fine. I think it was around $300 million. But, you know, obviously they're doing a lot of other things in the same vein. And, again, no one's gone to jail. And, you know, as a practical matter, as far as I know at Goldman, no one's lost their position. I mean, none of the top
still advising the president. They're telling him how he can do what they did, I suppose. The only way I can characterize it, again, Obama has to win. If he doesn't win, it gets worse. But the truth is he's invited into this meeting that we're talking about people who virtually would, they'd love to privatize Social Security. I mean, they'd love to, they would love to put this money in the hands of the Wall Street thugs who lost almost $18 trillion in the last burn down. I mean, isn't that part of the plan here?
Well, I'm not betting on them looking to privatize Social Security, at least not in the immediate future. I think we've probably been saved by the collapse in the stock market. I don't think they're going to try and go that way.
But it's still on the table is what I'm trying to say, Dean. The last time
I
read...
Well, I mean, the immediate issue is cutting back Social Security.
Mm-hmm.
And that's, you know, I'm saying that because you have a lot of politicians who are happy to say I'm opposed to privatizing Social Security. And basically those people are saying they're for cuts in the program. Because at the moment, no one's talking about privatizing Social Security. So the point is they're talking about cutting it, and they're cutting it for people who really need that money. So it's
right.
It's an incredibly cynical and, to my mind, cruel thing to do. If we want money, we can get it from Wall Street. I've worked on this with a friend of mine, Bob Poland, who's at University of Massachusetts, and we calculate you can get about $150 billion a year from a modest tax on financial speculation. So that's
is there a country in the – and part of this, of course, has to do with just our dysfunctional – medical or healthcare system. I mean, the last time I looked, the numbers were anywhere between 17 to 22% of our gross national product, gross domestic product, that is eaten up with healthcare. Are there? I'm not aware of any other civilized urban country where you see that.
We spend more than twice as much per person as the average for other wealthy countries on health care. So if you look at Canada, Germany, you take the average of those countries, we're spending more than twice as much. And if we spent the same, you know, or something close to that, you know, our long-term budgets would look great. I mean, there'd be no shortfalls at all. So when you hear these stories, you know, these people running around, we've got, you know, $70 trillion shortfall or whatever, it's a healthcare story. And, you know, if they were honest, you go, okay, well, if our healthcare costs keep exploding like that, we're going to have a huge problem. But that's going to be for both the public and private sector. We won't be able to afford our healthcare, so it will be a big drain on the budget, but it's also going to be a big drain on us, who those of us who aren't getting, you know, Medicare or Medicaid, you know, because we won't be able to afford healthcare from our paycheck.
Is that on the table? Is discussion about, you know, look, before we go cutting everybody, before we cut the very people who need assistance the most, shouldn't we consider maybe revitalizing the healthcare system in very specific ways to where it's not 20% of our gross domestic product? I know we've made the first step with Obamacare. We've made the first step. But when you drill down on it, there's so much waste that it's almost startling.
Yeah, and that is the only reasonable thing to do here because, you know, it's sort of nuts to say we have a budget problem when it really is a healthcare problem. You know, we have to fix the healthcare system because suppose we go, hey, we can't afford this. We're going to zero out Medicare and Medicaid. Okay, that's wonderful. How then are people over age 65 going to pay for their health care?
Right.
The idea just,
yeah.
Okay, well, they're going to die in the streets. Well, that doesn't sound like a really good idea. I mean,
Dean, keep reporting on this. It's amazing that most people don't even know these meetings are taking place. And it's also interesting that nobody on the street, we haven't been invited to the meeting, I guess is the best way to put it. I'm Mike Papantonio standing in for Tom Hartman. Give me a call. I'm going to take your calls when I come back. 866-987-8466. We'll talk about what you want to discuss.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Visit TomHartman.com for audio and video archives.
I'm Mike Papantonio standing in for Tom Hartman. Follow me on Twitter at Ring of Fire Radio. Tell me what you have on your mind. We'll be right back. Welcome back to the Tom Hartman Program. I'm Mike Papantonio standing in for Tom Hartman today and the rest of the week, I think. So let's have some fun. Let's go to some of these callers, 866-987-8466. Let's go to Jeff in Maryland. Jeff, you still holding?
Yes, I am, Mike. Hey, I was really interested in your litany of what you were saying about the Republicans, but you forgot to add one thing to the list, and that's how Valerie Plame was outed by a right-wing administration based on fear. I mean, this is how these people operate. Is based there. Everything they've done so far is based on fear. I mean, look what Romney's doing in Ohio right now. He's trying to use the military against the president saying that they're going to lose their voting privileges. And that is absolutely outrageous that a person like that would use fear to sit there and pit people against other people. And I think, you know, accountability is accountability, and these people and the Republicans need to be accountable and held accountable for what they've done to this economy, what they're trying to do to my Social Security, because I'm almost at my age of Social Security right now. It's just outrageous what they're doing. They have
Let me answer. Okay, you know, when I opened the program, I would never open a program with those kind of statements unless they're sourced. If you want a great source of material, Chris Mooney, we've interviewed him so many times at different shows that I've done. He came out with this book called The Republican Brain. And I think the reason it's important, you don't have to take his opinion in it. You can take the empirical data that he has in it and understand that for years, what we did, Jeff, is we tried to, it was a mystery. How could somebody be capable of the thing that you just talked about? For example, the Valerie Plame. That wasn't about the Republicans were afraid. That was about they were willing to put us into a war and kill thousands of Americans, tens of thousands of Iraqi men, women, and children, because it benefited them economically. Now, we might look at that and we might say, you know, gee, that sounds like a sociopath to me. It really does. So it sounds like a psychopath to me. And we scratch our head and say, how can we possibly be so different? But the point is now we're living in an age where technology has us understand that there is a physical difference. There is a biological, physical difference in the way we process information. You mentioned fear. Republicans, and there's Mooney talks about two or three studies in here, where Republicans, for whatever reason, are afraid. They're just damned afraid of everything. I don't know. You know, it just has to do with their biological makeup. I talked about Jack Block study. This guy was a credible scientist from Stanford University. He followed kids from the time they were in a sandbox to the time they grew up. And he said, yeah, very different qualities. The kids in the sandbox, when they were tykes, were afraid of everything. They were the ones that screaming to hold on to mommy's leg and wouldn't leave mommy. And nothing really changed as they got older. And as they got older, they grabbed their guns. They tried to shout everybody down. They tried to scare everybody else that was just like them. And it is crazy for us not to talk about it. It's crazy for us to say it's politically incorrect to talk about these types of biological, physiological divides that obviously are there. If you don't believe me, put 10 of them in a room. This is something Tom's had to do it too. This is something that I've done for years, is being on the other side of the Fox News crowd in a debate. Four of them on one side of the table, me on the other. And it's the only way you can look at it is you have to rationally understand what you're up against. You can't change their mind. They're incapable of that. Let's go to Wes in Seattle.
Hi, Mike. I sure love your spots on MSNBC. I hope you keep doing them.
Well, thank you. I'm doing a little less MSNBC. I don't think I think I might be a little bit too left. But anyway, go ahead.
Well, you know, in reference to what you were saying earlier in the program, would you, you know, I equate racism with ignorance.
Sure.
Now, if you look at what happened when LBJ signed the Voting Rights Bill and the Civil Rights Bill, all the Dixiecrats in the South immediately became Republicans. Mm. Because in the Republican Party, it's okay to hate. It's also okay to tell lies and base your policies on something other than facts.
Yeah.
Now,
Wes,
in this kind of a la-la land that they live in, anybody who speaks truth to lies is
shouted down. They're shouted down.
And the other thing is, if you're Harry Reid and you just infer that Mitt Romney hasn't paid any taxes for 10 years, well, you're immediately a dirty liar.
Best thing you can do if you're listening to this program is send an email of support for Harry Reid. At last, we see a Democrat that has a spine. And Harry Reid is smart enough to understand this is a win-win situation for him. He's not going to run again. He's 76 years old. He just got reelected. And you know what? They can say, well, Harry, tell us who that person was. It doesn't solve the problem. doesn't solve the problem that what we've learned about Mitt Romney is he has $102 million in his IRA with no explanation. He got it there in 15 years. He has bank accounts from Bermuda to Jamaica to Switzerland to third world countries, banana republics, where he can engage in graft. He can engage in bribery. Now we find out that his money is, and Tom reported this, it's incredible. Mainstream media, traditional media, is just now picking up the story that Tom has been talking about forever, and that is the blood money that goes back to El Salvador with the Romney Bain money. That's why we need his tax returns. Tom was talking about this a month ago. Mainstream media is just now talking about it, but it's a story with legs. I have to tell you this, you know, this matters. If you want to see this story stay alive, get an email out to Harry Reid and encourage his courage, because that's what it takes. You have to have courage in this kind of political atmosphere, and he's showing that courage. I'm Mike Papantonio, 866-987-8466. I'll be right back.
Listening to Tom Hartman. You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
Welcome back to the Tom Hartman Program. I'm Mike Papantonio, standing in for Tom. If you've been following the polls recently, it's apparent to me at least that Mitt Romney is in trouble if the Democrats will stand strong, if the Democrats will do things like stand behind Harry Reid for saying the obvious, and that is that Mitt Romney is hiding something from us. Mitt Romney is fearful that we'll find something out about his checkered past. But you know what? It doesn't seem to matter to Mitt, because the Republicans have a plan, and the plan is to keep people from the polls. If they can't vote, the Republicans can win, because the Republicans can put their teabag types on a bus, bus them down in droves, and they can change this election. So what's happened is you have voter purge, voter ID laws that are taking place all over the country, but there's some good news. Somewhere, somebody has said, we got to do something about it. I've got Steven Rosenfeld, covers democracy issues for Alternet. He's the author of Count My Vote, A Citizen's Guide to Voting, knows a lot about this subject, has been following it a long time, even before the rest of us were paying attention. Steven, tell us what's happening up in Philadelphia.
Well, hey, thanks for having me on.
Pennsylvania, excuse me.
There is some good news, and you might not think about it because there's so much noise and politics of distraction and propaganda. But in Pennsylvania, the Republicans adopted a strict new voter ID law, and it's been challenged in court, and it looks like, now, it's hard to predict court decisions, but it looks like our side pushed back incredibly forcefully.
Stay with me, Steve. Well, let me ask you this. What's happened here, what I think is the most interesting is this, is that you have the American civil liberties that they're having to bring a case, because for 5 years we've been talking about this. I know Bobby Kennedy, I've been talking about. We've actually brought KeyTam cases on issues like this. You've had radio talkers, progressives talking about this for a long time, and it was ignored, and the Justice Department took no action. So they're having to play catch up. So the people who are catching them up is not the government. It's not the DOJ. It's people like we see happening in Pennsylvania.
It's people whose roots are in the voting rights movement and the civil rights movement, and they're suing under state constitutions first, where there is a clear right to vote. They're presenting people who are already harmed. That's really a big deal, because 4 years ago, you know, people would bring these cases and the laws hadn't gone into effect yet, so there was nobody who could show that they were harmed. Instead, They're bringing out retirees and vets and other people who don't have the money to get the documents, to get these new IDs, that don't have the transportation.
Stephen, paint a picture of what the courtroom has looked like. Paint a picture of what's been happening in that courtroom. Who's been testifying? What have they been saying? What's the judge's reaction? Give us an overall picture of that.
Well, the judge, who is an elected Republican but who has ruled against his party, is very conservative and very fair-minded. So he's taking testimony from both the state officials and from plaintiffs about the impact of this new voter ID law.
And what is the testimony we're hearing? What is the type
of
testimony?
Well, it's remarkable because, as I said a second ago, you have people who are showing they've really been harmed, and then you have harmed by having to get paperwork they can't get birth certificates they can't get, spend money, spend days, spend time. And then you have the state election officials saying, what's the big deal? They didn't put on a single witness to defend their case. Instead, they can't even say how this law is going to be rolled out.
Stephen, let me ask you something. My following on this when it first started is I looked at the stipulations. And the stipulations from the people who are trying to pass this draconian you can't vote law is, first of all, they stipulated, my memory is they stipulated that there has never been any type of fraud that's taken place. They can't identify. Nobody's been found in the state impersonating a voter, for example. And they said they even had to go as far, if my memory's right, that they didn't have any direct knowledge of anybody trying to scam the system.
That's exactly what the stipulation said. So then you have the prospect of state election officials and the state attorney general saying, we are here to defend a law that we can't justify, but because the legislature passed it, we have to let it stand. So now you have a very conservative judge who's sitting, and the questions he's asking are twofold. The first is, you know, do I have the power to overturn an absurd law by the legislature?
And the answer to that is yes. There's no question that he does have
and
standing to do
that. The second question is one of timing, because right now, even if he doesn't want to overturn this law, the state that's officials who are supposed to implement it, they're acting like buffoons.
What he could do, Steve, is one thing that he can do, of course, is sit on this as long as he needs to sit on it. If it gets to the Supreme Court there in Pennsylvania, that could be a problem. So timing is important.
Well, that's actually true and not true. He said he's going to rule by next week, and the state Supreme Court has a crisis, its own little scandal, and you have a 3-3, you know, evenly.
You have three versus, it's a split on the Supreme Court, and the split is such that what's happening is you've got Democrats equaling Republicans right now, because my memory is that you had one of the Republicans that's already been investigated for some type of irregularity. Stephen, you're breaking up for some reason. I'm not sure. So help me with that. Okay.
Here's the thing. This is the kind of litigation that seems like it's going to be on our side if a fair-minded judge rules. And we didn't quite see this so early 4 years ago. And it's important to realize that we are slowly but surely pushing back, or it looks like we're positioned to do that. And there are signs the Republicans know it and are getting even more desperate, because some of the other stuff they're doing is just beyond the pale.
Okay, let me point some things out. I don't really care what happens in Texas right now. We can deal with that later. I don't care what, because Texas is not going to be an Obama state anyway. I don't care what happens in Alabama and Mississippi, South Carolina, where they're trying to game this system. Possibly South Carolina. The demographics are shifting. Florida, for example, the media did a terrible job trying to explain what in the hell happened down here. But basically, you had a federal judge that says, look, under the Civil Rights, 1965-64 Civil Rights Act, Voters' Rights Act, we have you have responsibilities to show us, I'm talking about you have who are challenging this, you have responsibility to show us that there has been some type of racial disparity taking place. That's all he was asking for. So now the Justice Department is going forward affirmatively with that. They can hold that up a long time. The DOJ finally is motivated, I guess. I mean, they've been brain dead on this issue for so long. And had it not been for people like the American Civil Liberties Association and other voting rights groups, we'd be dead in the water right now, wouldn't we?
That is true, but and it's not something that, you know, the Obama administration should be proud of. But the fact is, they have said no to some of the stuff in Florida that has made voter registration harder. It does not look like there's going to be this statewide purge there. I think that's mostly a Tea Party.
No, it's not. It's stopped. It has stopped. I can tell you. Okay, look, Stephen, we're out of time, but this is a great analysis that you did. Voter ID laws in the swing states. Followed this a long time. You've done a great job with it. I hope you'll continue to do that.
Well, thank you very much.
And I'll certainly have you back on as we get closer to the election. We're going to see them pull out all the stops. Wisconsin is a big concern of mine. You never know. But I look at the swing states. What are they trying to do in the swing states to keep people from voting? Because they're doing the electoral votes, the electoral count. And now they understand, really, that maybe it's not going to be as easy as they thought in keeping people away from the polls. 866-987-8466. I'm Mike Papantonio, standing in for Hartman. Give me a call.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
I'm Mike Papantonio, standing in for Tom Hartman. Follow me on Twitter at Ring of Fire Radio. I want to know what you're thinking about. We'll be right back. Welcome back to the Tom Hartman Program. I'm Mike Papantonio, in for Tom Hartman. I love these tweets. Question authority, always there with good ideas. Harry, call Harry Reid. Thank him for what he's doing. He's showing courage. Occupy corporations, great thinker. This guy's, they're always on top of this. Corporate welfare, shouldn't we call Mitt Romney the true corporate welfare queen, mooching off the 99%? And then would you say, and this is this is a thought, would you say the Republicans have become dutiful Stepford Republicans? You'll have to decide that one yourself. I think so. Let's go to the callers. Kevin in Erie, Pennsylvania. Are you there?
Yes. Can you hear me, Mike?
I can.
All right. Mike, I would like to say one thing, first of all, and then go on to another point or two, if you don't mind. To start, I would like to thank you so much. Thank you. And thank Ed Schultz and Bill Maher and people like you. You get in these guys, their faces, you know, and you give it right back to them. When they try to bully you down and shout you down on TV, you stand up to them, and I admire that.
Well, thank you. It's nice of you to say that.
And secondly, I'd like to say I believe sincerely, I agree with Carl Frisch, he mentioned it last week, that conservatism is a form of psychosis. It is a mental illness. These guys, they're control freaks, they're bullies, and we all know how bullies are, you know? They're directed by and ruled by their own anger and bitterness and hatred, and they're pathological liars. They'll do anything. They will do anything.
You know, Kevin, this, if you follow, again, Chris just happened to have written, he just happened to have nailed it with this book, The Republican Brain. There's been other books written about it that are also very interesting. But one thing that he points out, and one thing, not necessarily in this book, but the writing points out, this is something that pervades all parts of their lives. It is kind of the authoritarian father figure. You see, whether they're at home, their authority, the children must comply with authority. If they don't, then they're in trouble by the authoritarian father, because the father is so afraid that what he's doing is he's putting down this authority on the children in his mind to keep them safe, because he's afraid of everything. He makes their children afraid of everything. They grow up being afraid of everything. They grow up being incapable of saying, okay, well, this is different. I haven't seen this before. This idea is different. These people are different. The culture is different. But I'm not afraid of it. That's where you want your child to go. That's what you would prefer. And if you look, even they even trace households. What comes out of the household? How is a child raised? Is it the authoritarian, under the thumb kind of household, or is it the kind of household where there's rational thinking, where you sit down with your child and you talk about the issues rather than ordering them and demanding it and beating it into them? Because ultimately, those are features that follow them, not just in their in their private lives. They follow them in their business lives. It follows in their political lives. It follows in their religious life. I live down here in the South, as you probably have figured out, live down here all my life. I see it so much in the churches, even. If you were the difference between a Southern Baptist church, for example, or a Episcopalian church, or even a Presbyterian church, the difference is that demanding authority that doesn't leave room, Kevin, for people to think. It doesn't leave room for people to analyze. And it pervades all parts of their lives, if you look closely. If you carry on a conversation with them, their judgmentalness. And so, it may be politically incorrect. Every time I bring this issue up, every time I've brought it up over the years, I've had somebody say, how dare you say that we have preconceived, preconditioned ways that we develop. But unfortunately, the empirical data is showing that. Some of this is solid epidemiology. It's just not something where somebody just says, well, hell, let me just take a look at this. Some of it is very solid science. So I think there's something to it. Let me go to Ray in McHenry, Illinois. He's been holding a long time. Ray, thank you for holding. You still there?
Yeah, I'm still here. Thanks, Mike. Two quick points, though. Isn't it ironic that the Republicans want to eliminate critical thinking for fear it causes rebellion in a state that openly talks about succeeding?
I never thought about that. But, yeah, don't we wish that Texas would secede? I wish they would. Nothing would make me happier. It's an interesting irony. Go ahead.
The other thing about Mitt Romney, he's the beneficiary of welfare in the form of the capital gains tax being at 15%, because that encourages him and others to not work. Because if they work, they may have to pay 35% on the upper end of their income, whereas they can just give it to somebody else, sit by the pool, as Tom says, wait for their dividend check, and then only pay 15% on it. So that's a form of welfare.
Well, it is. And that's why I just love this comment from Occupy Corporations. I don't know if you're on his email list. You probably are his tweet list, but you should be. He said, isn't Romney the true corporate welfare queen, mooching millions from the 99ers and then acting like nobody has given him any benefit? I mean, that is the mentality. That's the trained mentality. The other part of that, Ray, is we miss this sometimes. The people who stole $18 trillion from pension programs in this last burndown, on Wall Street, the Wall Street thugs, the folks dressed up in silk suits with a Rolex watch and in fancy shoes, those people don't make anything. They don't build bridges, Ray. They don't build cars or airplanes or infrastructure. They simply make money with illusory documents called swaps and CDOs and synthetics. So what Tom, I'm sure, was talking about is they sit by the pool. And we're the ones that are taken advantage of in that process, because we've been a company, we've become a country to ship real manufacturing out, ship real jobs out, and count on these smart boys on Wall Street to try to save the American economy. And nothing is more dreadful in my mind than to think that we're counting, that we have to make sure that the folks on Wall Street are going to take care of this country. They won't. 866-987-8466. I'm Mike Papantonio in for Tom Hartman. We'll be right back.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Call 866-987-THOM.
I'm Mike Papantonio in for Tom Hartman. When we come back, Adele Stan talking about GOP spinning up 8. We'll be back. Welcome back to the Tom Hartman Program. I'm Mike Papantonio, standing in for Tom Hartman. You know, when they get backed into a corner, the Republicans, when on policy issues like this, they always turn to what they know best, and that is to gin up hate. I mean, they're masters of it. Lee Atwater taught them how to do it. Karl Rove took it to a whole new level. And now you have the Koch brothers and all of the PAC money that's ginning it up in a real serious way. Adele Stan is Alternet's Washington correspondent. She saw it firsthand. Adele, how are you?
I'm all right, Mike. Thanks for having me.
Of course. This is a fascinating article that you wrote. It's just absolutely absolutely fascinating. But there's no, to me, were there any surprises when you showed up at this confab? Tell us what happened.
Well, you know, I don't know that I would say I was surprised, Mike, because, you know, I've been doing this for a while now.
Yeah, I know. I've followed you for quite a while, actually.
But nonetheless, I've got to say that I never quite get used to it, because it's very hard to get used to when you hear this kind of vitriol spewed, you know, from a podium in a well-appointed hotel ballroom, and you're sitting there knowing that you are exactly the kind of person they're talking about, right?
Yeah, yeah.
So I think that, you know, it's going in many ways as we expected, in terms of the rhetoric. I mean, they're talking about, I mean, you know, Mark Levin, the right-wing talker, I mean, he's mad at Romney for not bringing up Bill Ayers. I mean, that's like...
Yeah. Yeah, ancient history. Okay, so Adele, you're in this you're watching this play itself out. First of all, I think it's remarkable that you were able to even get around these people. But for reading your article, the thing that struck me is they don't have any confidence in Mitt Romney.
You hardly heard his name.
Yeah, it's not that they like Mitt Romney. They just absolutely hate Obama. They hate that there's a black man in the White House.
Well, you know, they'll give you all kinds of other reasons for it as well. And, you know, some are probably legitimate and some are not. I mean, legitimate from their perspective, their philosophical perspective. But, of course, there is that. I mean, basically what Romney is banking on, Mike, is that this is going to be an election about cultural identity, right?
Mm. Yeah, we're already seeing it. We're seeing the relaunch of the welfare queen, aren't we?
We totally are.
Yeah,
and then it's this whole false charge about Obama and welfare reform is nothing more than an attempt to link a black president to welfare. That's it.
Exactly. Black president, and he's taking care of black people and doesn't care about white people.
Yeah, and that's exactly right. And I guess you down there in Florida, you're used to seeing this
trope play. It works. We saw it, of course, with old man Bush,
mm-hmm.
and it worked well with him. Here's what they found. When you go back and look at that, they found that especially in a down economy,
right, exactly.
You have people, I'm working hard, I'm not getting ahead,
mm-hmm.
and the welfare queen is getting all of my money because the welfare president loves the welfare queen more than he loves me.
Right.
That's basically
and never mind that this whole thing that Romney has drummed up and that I heard, you know, repeated at the Koch event, which is what Americans for Prosperity really is, you know, it has been proven to be a complete lie.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
All Obama has done is offered the states waivers if they can show that their programs would put more people to work.
Well, I mean, that's the trick here, Adele, as you've written about before. The trick is to deconstruct the obvious to where the obvious is becomes illusory. For example, John Kerry wounded himself so he could get a medal. Bill Clinton, you know, is a Chinese spy.
Right.
You know, those are the things that they understand. They're not dealing with a real rocket science public here.
Well, here's the thing, though, Mike. Do you think, I mean, I guess I'm turning the tables asking you a question, but here's this. Do you think that facts even matter anymore?
No, they don't.
Yeah.
They don't. We were just, matter of fact, I opened this program, and I know you've probably seen Chris Mooney's book about the Republican brain.
Absolutely. Well, we run a lot of excerpts from it on
yes,
the internet.
Yes. Well, that's the fascinating thing, is I read this very well-written little history that you put together about what happened at this meeting. The thing I was most amazed about is that there used to be some effort to try to hide this kind of shameful hatred. But
mm-hmm.
that's what's at work here. It is a shameful hatred that they almost can't disguise. Tell me who the stars were at this crazy confab.
Well, the big star, the big star, the guy that they just love, Mike, is Governor Scott Walker of Wisconsin.
Isn't that remarkable? Can barely talk in sentences.
He really is the most boring speaker ever because he has to read every word. But they just love this guy because he told the unions what for.
Adele, tell me what you learned about what their strategy was in Wisconsin. We know that they really did a great job in a grassroots attack in Wisconsin. They had all of the way I looked at it, the way I saw it, it was like a Cocoon. It was a massive, you would have thought they were filming Cocoon. They had all of these old people who had nothing to do during the day, I suppose. Hell, I don't know. But they created this ground game, didn't they?
They surely did.
Did they brag about it there?
They bragged about it there at the Coke event, Mike, and they bragged about it in June at Ralph Reed's conference.
Yes.
Because here's the deal. You know, the Tea Party and the religious right are virtually indistinguishable in terms of who's, you know, I mean, they're just organizing different, you know, factions of the right, but it's all one big thing when you get down to creating the ground game. So you have Ralph Reed organizing the evangelicals. You've got Americans for Prosperity organizing both evangelicals and anybody who's right wing but falls outside that description. And what they're doing is, you know, they have this. I mean, it's an awesome program. I got to say that they have.
Yeah, they have they use GPS tagging. They use something that looks like an iPad focus concept. Tell me about it. I mean, it is fascinating. I mean, you know, most of the time Democrats are way ahead on issues like that because, well, they understand technology better and they don't have to type with just thumbs.
Well, here's the deal. You know, like Ralph Reed, he got his Faith and Freedom Coalition. They combined like all this bells and whistles high tech stuff with some old fashioned shoe leather, and you know they basically subcontracted with Ralph Reed's for profit.
Yeah, unbelievable.
Firm.
Yeah,
and who in turn subcontracted with these tech guys
who the IRS won't investigate, is afraid to investigate. If they did, they'd find all kinds of. But anyway.
So the thing is that they're using micro targeting, which is, you know, your listeners would be familiar with that. Is like if you order something online, right, from L.L. Bean, and then you go onto any website, and all of a sudden these L.L. Bean ads start popping up at you, right? Right? That's micro-targeting. So,
right.
So now they got voter files where they can also merge data of your consumer habits with your voter file, and they know a whole lot about you, and they can determine from that how inclined you are to vote for their guy if you would only get to the polls.
And we're going to see, I suppose the reason that they talk so much about it is we expect to see that in swing states.
Oh,
certainly,
yeah.
In swing states.
Oh.
And was Ralph Reed beating on his chest and talking about how he had pulled it out for Bob McDonnell?
Yes, he was. Exactly right. And don't we think that McDonald might have a shot at being the running mate?
That's why I was going to ask you, was there talk about we need Bob McDonald as he's governor?
There sure was.
Governor in an important swing state there in Virginia. We'd have to have him on the ticket. The problem I see is it would upstage Mitt Romney.
Right, because he is very charming and he's handsome, and the evangelical folks are going to really like him. But Romney really has a big problem in Virginia, and he may absolutely need McDonald.
Is it the Mormon problem? Or?
Well, it's partly the Mormon problem and partly the fact that there is a third-party candidate who's a favorite son.
Yeah. That's the evangelical candidate that wants to run on the fact that we need to make America into one Christian nation.
Yeah, and that not only that, but that biblical law should become the law of the land.
Yes. It's okay to stone women on suspicion of adultery. Yeah.
But he's actually polling rather well. So, you know, Romney can't afford to lose Virginia. So 1% would be too much.
Tell me about the Chick-fil-A story that I love that you added, because to me it just really summed up how kooky these people are. Tell the Chick-fil-A, I got 1 minute, but tell me quickly what struck you about it.
Well, what struck me about it was that, you know, the Chick-fil-A thing was supposed to be like a religious right thing, right? Dan Cathy, the CEO of Chick-fil-A, said he's against gay marriage, God's going to smite us, you know, that kind of thing.
Right.
And got the support of the religious right. Well, then a couple of liberal mayors said, oh, we're not going to let Chick-fil-A's, you know, zone in our you know, our cities. And then it is a free enterprise issue. And
I'm short on time.
For prosperity.
But they were all over the place
there.
They
were all over it.
Adele, thanks for joining me. Great work as usual. I'm Mike Papantonio, standing in from Tom Hartman, 866-987-8466. We'll be right back.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Visit TomHartman.com for audio and video archives.
I'm Mike Papantonio, standing in for Tom Hartman. Follow me on Twitter, Ring of Fire Radio. Let me know what you're thinking about. I'll be right back.
Don't punish me with brutality. Don't talk to me so you can see.
Welcome back to the Tom Hartman Program. I'm Mike Papantonio, standing in for Tom Hartman. Let's go to these callers. Donna in Phoenix. And by the way, thank you for holding. I know you've been holding a long time. All the lines are packed in, and we're getting to them as soon as we can. Donna, you there?
I am.
Go ahead.
I just had a couple of comments. I love what you were talking about the Republican brain. I grew up in the 50s and 60s in junior high and high school, and I'm from Pensacola, which I know you're familiar with.
Yeah, I'm broadcasting right now from Pensacola.
But it used to be very different when I was there, and I think a lot of it had to do with the fact that at that time, everybody you knew was military. They had moved all over the United States in and out of conservative areas into, you know, California and Washington and back and stuff.
Diverse ideas, yeah. Diverse
and ideas. Very diverse.
Bad news, Donna. It's not like that anymore. Now we've become.
Yeah, it's not, and it's very, very different. And as far even the churches, when I was in junior high and high school, and I was raised Southern Baptist, they used to preach at the pulpit separation of church and state, mm-hmm. and they preached it as a matter of patriotism, and because the Baptists had been persecuted earlier. So, and all that's changed. I can't even talk to them anymore.
Well, it's impossible. I mean, what's happened is you probably figured out, it's not just Pensacola, Florida. I mean, it's the entire Southeast. You've had the Southern Baptist and the evangelicals captured by the Republicans. For some reason, Republicans steal from them. Republicans hustle them. Republicans kill their children in wars based on total lies. Republicans want to take their benefits away from them when they become elderly. Republicans don't want them to have the caliber of health care that they have. But nevertheless, they feel this kinship with Republicans. And it's two things, as you know. One is the abortion issue. And the other one is this sense that Democrats, since they embrace everybody, do that at the risk of offending God. I mean, that's the best way I can put it. If you embrace same-sex marriage, for example, you offend God, therefore we can't be part of that party. The third part of it, though, that is a nuance is, as you know, having lived here, racism is alive and flourishing in places like Alabama and Mississippi, North Florida, Texas, Georgia. It's all around us. And if you've been down here lately, you probably see that difference. I don't know if you've ever heard this term, but there's something called plantation politics. Plantation politics means this, that you had a division in this country where you had northern aristocracy. Northern aristocracy was a Puritan aristocracy. They did a lot of bad things, but in the process, they understood they had a responsibility to take care of the least of their community. They built libraries. They built schools. They had a sense that they had a responsibility to take care of their community, that they had a kinship with the community. In the South, part of the division that people don't understand, part of the division was you had what we call a plantation aristocracy, which had a very different feeling about what liberty is. Liberty for the plantation aristocracy is that they should be able to do whatever the hell they want to do if they have enough money. Sarah Robinson, a wonderful writer, with Alternate, as a matter of fact, did a great piece on this, where she said that now Southern aristocracy, part of it is we judge our success under Southern aristocracy according to how much we can take advantage of other people. Can we pollute the streams? Can we pollute the air? Can we take their money? Can we subjugate them in some way? That aristocracy is alive and well in the South. It has been, it's the same thing, if you think about it, Donna, that caused the during the Civil War, the Confederate soldier to charge into cannons on behalf of an aristocracy that could not possibly care less about their life. They had nothing to gain by charging that cannon, but they were talked into it. That's alive and well in the South. It's very tough to shake it. Go back and take a look at Sarah Robinson's writing. Other people have written about it, but it's an interesting concept that's alive and flourishing in Pensacola. Let me go to John in Minneapolis. John, are you there?
Yes. Thanks for taking my call. I just wanted to say that, speaking of economics, capitalism is really in the, well-developed capitalism is a problem for democracy because it concentrates so much wealth in so few hands that it just undermines democracy. And so what we have, you're talking about plantation aristocracy. We have a worldwide aristocracy.
Right.
That basically, people who have fought for freedom, my father and previous generations, it's a slap in the face to people like that because really we have done nothing except just, reinstated another type of aristocracy.
Yeah, John, let me address this quickly. Capitalism is a system that works only when everybody has money to make it work. Now, capitalism that's been bastardized is not really capitalism. Capitalism that's been bastardized is where all the money is held by 1%, and there's not enough money in the 99% to promote the system. In other words, capitalism stops at that point. If you look at any civilization where they've had anything similar, once that money is all holed up at the very top, then capitalism stops working, and that breeds revolution. You've seen in Mexico, you've seen in Italy, you've seen in South American countries time after time. Capitalism was where they started, but then money ended up at the very top 1% without any kind of trickle down at all. Capitalism does not work under that kind of setting. So, if you really think about it, capitalism can't work. It is that greed, the love of money, since we got to just talking about religion, it is the love of money. It's not money that creates the problem. It is the love of money. It is the greed. It is, I need 2 steaks. I need 10 steaks rather than one. I need 5 cars rather than 1 car. I need a 30,000 square foot home that has an elevator for my car. I need a racehorse. I need a show horse. That's capitalism that's gone crazy. I'm Mike Papantonio in for Tom Hartman. I'll be back.
Listening to Tom Hartman. You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
Welcome back to Tom Hartman Show. I'm Mike Papantonio standing in for Tom. I have a smart, smart man with me. Where in the hell you been, John Amato?
Hey, Big Mike, what's going on, my friend?
John Amato is the founder of Crooks and Liars blog. If you want information, go there. It's always there. He was ahead of the Mitt Romney story before anybody else was, the story about when is the guy going to give it up. Hey, John, let me ask you. Right now we have this story gets worse by the day for the Mitster. Now we have this new media focusing, even though you were focusing, I was focusing, Tom Hartman was focusing on the El Salvador story, finding out that Bain Capital got 40% of their money from death squad backers down in El Salvador, death squads that killed 75,000 people, 40% of the money came from El Salvador. Tom Hartman was doing a story on this. Now, interestingly enough, I know you saw that ProPublica and Salon.com, same writer, covered this story in the media yawned. But now when you follow this tax story, you start saying, well, hell, that's why we need to know. That's why we need to know where is the, you know, what are the connections? Don't you see it?
Yeah, I know, absolutely. There's only really, I mean, what kind of reasons would Mitt Romney not want to release his tax returns? It's really that simple, because every candidate has to release tax returns. It's, you know, you need to be scrutinized. Your finances need to be looked at. And if you refuse to do it, you have, you know, serious reasons. I mean, he's been getting beat up by his own side, like Crazy Bill Kristol on Fox News, just calling it ridiculous.
Let me tell you, when Crazy Bill Kristol goes after your own side, you know things are really out of whack.
Oh, exactly. Yeah, he's pretty cunning, and he'll do it when it'll do the least amount of damage, but when he's trying to give a message, right? You know, so they're very smart with their critiques. They'll do it in the middle of the summer when nobody's paying attention. But it is really a travesty, and the fact that the media, you know, our mainstream media, the Beltway Press, they just gloss over it. They gloss over the insane practices. You know, nobody knows anything about Mormonism in this country, and I've been studying it. And if you were to actually study the Mormon religion, and boy, I'm not anti-religion by any means, you would scratch your head.
John, let me ask you something. I know you weren't going to talk about this, but I have to, because I know you know about this topic. I know you know about this topic. You read Under the Banner of Heaven, probably, a great book, and
yeah,
what it does.
Times.
Yeah, and Under the Banner of Heaven tells the story that the media, you know, you can understand why, you know, the media is not talking about it. It's too weird. I mean, you got this cat, Joseph Smith, and look, I'm not beating up on Mormonism, but you have to tell this damn story. The story is Joseph Smith finds these gold tablets. And
golden plates.
Golden plates, and God's talking to him through the golden plates. And then they said, well, Joe, you know, why don't you share them with us? Now, this is after Joe had already been run out of town for being a fraud. He was a scam artist. And so then all of a sudden they say, well, Joe, how about sharing the golden plates with us? And he said, well, I lost them. Really? You lost them? Well, could you write down what they said? And what he wrote down was hieroglyphics that basically had come from a circus wagon that was coming through town.
Right, and from the seer stones.
Yeah. So now listen, I know you weren't set to talk about this, but you said something that is powerfully important. And it is, why is it we can talk about Christianity, we can talk about Muslim religion, we can talk about Hindu and Buddhist, but we can't talk about Mormonism?
Absolutely.
Why can't we at least say
spent on Reverend Wright and that whole thing with Obama, right?
What is Planet Golob? What is up with invisible underwear? What is all this? People.
I mean, it's so detailed and convoluted. I mean, look, in basic religions, right? I grew up Catholic. Well, most everybody you'd ask, they know that in a Catholic church, there's a priest. You know, you can get the sacrament at the end, and there's a confession, right? So you confess your sins, and then they know there's like a cardinal and the pope who leaves the church. In the Jewish faith, you know, you got your synagogue. Everybody knows there's rabbis. You know, they do their, you know, they have their services.
Yeah.
I mean, everybody knows what it is.
And it's easy to criticize. It's
the hierarchy of what is in the Mormon religion.
John, it's easy to look at any religion and say, wow, that's weird. But that's not my point here. My point is to say, why can't we talk about what in the hell is going on?
Right,
why can't we talk about it?
I mean, people have no information. And it's like, you know, I know a lot of liberal activists who are, and believe me, I think it's a small percentage of liberals who are complete atheists. But, you know, there's lots of Democrats and lots of lefties that are as religious as right-wing people.
Of course.
They don't use it to beat up the other side. They don't use it as this wedge issue that the Republicans have decided that it was smart for them to do, which is disgusting. But the fact that, like, you know, does anybody know what the Quorum of 12 is?
No.
You know, the first president.
You do, and I do, but most people don't. Go read Under the Banner of Heaven. John, I couldn't make this up. If I were to say, why didn't they let a black man in the church until 1976 or 77, you have to talk about it. You have to say, why did that happen?
Right, and here's the thing for Mitt Romney. He has this big quote, right, that when they lifted that ban, He pulled over in his car and he was crying. He was so happy. Did Mitt Romney ever criticize the Mormon Church once that they wouldn't allow a black person, you know, to hold the priesthood? No. But as soon as it's legal, oh, I'm so happy. You aren't happy. And here's another thing that people don't understand. Because Joseph Smith, you know, there's a lot of tension between the federal government, Joseph Smith, and even just normal Americans, because you know that Mormons were chased throughout the country. That's why they ended up out.
Yeah, they had to run.
In their own doctrines, that it's okay for them to lie. It's perfectly
acceptable to lie about
anything
as long as it furthers business or the family. That's
exactly
what I was going to raise.
Church.
Okay.
So why, and it's coming from Joseph Smith and from his followers. So why am I supposed to believe anything Mitt Romney says?
John, more importantly, why are you supposed to not talk about it? See, this is the only point. You can take every religion, you go, my God, really? This is what you believe? You can take every religion and do that. But we talk about it. You know, if you talk about Judeo-Christian religion, you can talk about it. You can talk about him. Why is it that
taboo
discussion about Mormonism is taboo? It is absolutely crazy.
There's only about 13 or 15 million Mormons in the world. I mean, it's a really small religion, and it's as if. You know, oh, he's doing, you know, he did his mission work in here. People think that Mormon missionaries' work is like, you know, Mother Teresa, right? No, it's about trying to convert people to become a Mormon. That's their mission. What's so great about that? Why is that exalted? Oh, he did his mission work. They don't even know what mission work is. You know, when Mormons talk about Israel, the Mormons aren't talking about Israel like today.
No, they're talking about the United. Yeah,
that's not the Israel they're talking about. It's
right.
The state of Israel from the first, you know, from way back in the Bible, and it's like an abstract concept that if they live their life, they'll all be Israelis.
John, look, we don't. I'm not trying to. We can't deconstruct the entire religion here, but we have to understand it. John, you said something that most people had never even heard. I've never talked about it, but let's talk about it. Part of what Joseph Smith said is it's okay to lie, it's okay to cheat, as long as it furthers our religion. Now, 1 minute. I got 1 minute left. Give me a quick response to that.
Yeah, I mean, it's typical. But here's an example of Mitt Romney doing exactly that. When he ran against Ted Kennedy, he scored like 100 for the Planned Parenthood, right? He was for abortion, for the government paying for low abortions. I mean, he answered yes, and so it's like he got 100. Turn today, he gets a 0. Like, how do you, you know, first he enforced themselves because it furthered his career.
Yeah.
As soon as he got elected, he was against them.
That's the kind of thing, John, we ought to be able to talk about. Hey, keep up the good work. I love your blog, Crooks and Liars. Everybody follow it. I'm Mike Papantonio in for Tom Hartman, 866-987-8466. I'll be back.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
Should we be able to talk about Mormonism? Give me a call. Maybe we shouldn't talk about it. Let me know what you think. I'm Mike Papantonio. I'll be right back. Ain't no millionaire, somebody. This is Mike Papantonio back in from Tom Hartman. Should I be able to talk about it? Should we be able to talk about Mormonism? I mean, is it off limits? Should we be able to talk about, virtually deconstruct every religion? Every religion has their oddity about it. But we're allowed to talk about it. We're allowed to talk about, able to talk about the Catholic Church when they get out of line. We're able to talk about the church that I've attended my entire life, the Methodist Church, when they get out of line. We talk about the Southern Baptists and talk about, you know, really how crazy. But we can't talk about Mormonism. I don't understand it. Janelle in Fayetteville, North Carolina, you there?
I sure am.
Go ahead.
I'm a first-time caller, and I love your program. And in response to, should we be able to talk about it? Absolutely, especially since we have someone running for president. And I am not a registered Democrat, but I am also quite sure that if the Republicans really knew what Mormons believe and what he proposes to believe, because he is an out-of-the-closet Mormon, I don't think anybody would vote for him. I really don't.
Janelle, it's a mystery to me. I mean, what is it that, you know, if somebody from the Catholic Church comes to me and says, you know, you're all wrong about the underpinnings of the religion Methodist that you've followed your entire life. Well, I'm not going to take offense. I want to hear what it is, but we can't talk about it. It's politically incorrect. You know, what am I supposed to say? Just read John Krakow's book, Under the Banner of Heaven, that tells the story? John Amato, who was just on the show, this guy is a very smart man. And, you know, he drilled down to the exact, I didn't bring it up, but he drilled down to exactly the issue that I was wondering about. If you understand what it is, where did it begin? What did Joseph Smith teach? That it's okay to lie. It's okay to cheat. If it's in furtherance of the religion or the family. That's very bothersome stuff to me. So we can't talk about it? It's politically incorrect? Well, it's not politically incorrect. It's something that you simply have to put on the table. And there's nothing wrong with putting it on the table. We talk about Scientology. We talk about, you know, the Wiccans. We talk about why can't we talk about Mormonism simply because we have a man who's running for president of the United States who's a Mormon? Didn't we talk about John F. Kennedy when he was running as a Catholic? Was that off the table? Well, hell no. It was squarely on the table. Let me go to Tom in Delaware. Are you there?
Yeah, can you hear me, Mike?
Yeah, I can. Go ahead.
Okay, well, first of all, I'm going to sound a little flustered because you were in my favorite horror movie, Jesus Camp.
Oh, Jesus Camp was a fun movie to do. That's why I'm so familiar with this. I remember filming that movie.
Fun? That was horrifying.
It was terrifying to me. My God.
Yeah.
Listen.
I mean, these people are, I mean, yeah, okay, religion. Well, okay, let's not pay attention to any facts. But that's what bothers me about the Mormon thing, and that's not why I called. But,
well, Tom, let me ask you something. A lot of people, matter of fact, the Jesus Camp was up for an Academy Award. And when I did Jesus Camp, I was coming from that movie from the standpoint of being, you know, being in the media business, who happens to have some very strong Christian basics to my life. And so I started the movie and they were talking about Christianity. And by the time it was over, I'm going, gee whiz, that's scary stuff. But they talked about it. Nobody said to these two bright, very capable directors, don't talk about it. They were brilliant in the way they did it. If you notice the movie, by the end of the movie, it was a gotcha moment where I was thinking, really, this is really going on out there. Because
you know
they analyzed.
Do you know who you reminded me of in that movie? Marlon Brando in Apocalypse Now, the horror.
It was horror. Anyway, Tom, go ahead. I didn't mean to interrupt you. Go ahead.
All right. Well, no, but the thing, did you see the documentary Proposition 8?
I haven't seen that. No, I haven't.
All right. It was a very good documentary. But, I mean, the Mormons, nobody wants to talk about this. And, you know, the Mormon religion, and I don't want to slash anybody's religion. I was raised Catholic. I grew out of it. But, you know, the Mormon religion is kind of creepy.
Well,
let me cut to the
heart of it. Why is it we should be able to talk about it? And give me, I got about 15 seconds. Why is it we should be able to talk about it, in your opinion?
Because the guy's running for president of the United States.
Okay. I'm with you.
I'm sorry. I know he's invoking executive privilege, even though he's not president yet.
Did we do that with Kennedy? When Robert F. Kennedy, when John F. Kennedy ran, you know, Bobby Kennedy is my partner in Ring of Fire. And we talk about this. We say, well, look at what they did with John F. Kennedy when he was a Catholic. He's running for president.
Honestly, Mike, I wasn't alive then. And
yeah.
I don't know. But the Mormon religion, it's like, hey, I don't want to knock it, but if you believe in it, I got some swampland probably near you that I can sell.
Hey, Tom in Delaware, thank you for joining me. Okay, let me get this next caller. They've been waiting. Rachel in Newport, are you there?
Yeah, I'm here, Mike. Just want to say thanks a lot for all you do as both a litigator and this talk show host. really help out people a lot. But what I was going to say is, I think if the Republicans are going to go into this issue of the welfare thing and tarnish, you know, bring up all this kind of racial overtones, the Democrats need to meet it head on, because I used to be a legal aid attorney, and believe me, these folks, a lot of them are single women with 3 and 4 children whose father has taken off because he didn't have the education, skill, or training to support
right.
the family.
Rachel, you see this as a legal aid attorney all the time. You see people trying to live on $22,000 a year. While we've been on this telephone call, Mitt Romney has made $22,000. But he doesn't think anybody else should at least have decency in their life. A modicum of decency. I'm Mike Papantonio in for Tom Hartman. We'll be right back.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Call 866-987-THOM.
I'm Mike Papantonio. When I come back, Ben Gordon talking about the dangers of metallosis from implants. Stay tuned.
Doctor, my eyes, tell me what you see. I hear their cries. Just say if it's too late for me.
Welcome back to the Tom Hartman Show. I'm Mike Papantonio, standing in for Tom Hartman. I'll get back to your calls. We got to go to Ben Gordon. He's going to talk about how medical devices are now on. You can buy them. The only problem is the FDA never tests them. Things like hips and knees and shoulder joints. Don't even test them to find out whether they actually work, whether they have the propensity to kill you in the long run. Ben Gordon, this issue of metallosis and the fact the FDA never even studied metallosis should scare the hell out of us, shouldn't it?
Yeah, you know, it's shocking, Mike, and I appreciate you having me on. The reports that are just coming out just today from the Netherlands, a report that the metal ions breaking down from these hip implants are found in mother's breast milk. Why? Because they have allowed marketing to control the message, to control clinical, to control the FDA, to control the government, and to sell these devices to a younger and broader audience, including women who are of childbearing age, which is just, it should be criminal.
Well, women are a greater risk to begin with, aren't they? Because, first of all, we're talking about, there are hip implants where you have metal on metal, the two parts of the hip, they rub it against each other, and you get cobalt from that, you get titanium, you get all types of metal particles. And they have it for knees, they have them for shoulders, they have them for hips. And now we learn, or the American public learns, that they never, the FDA never did any testing to find out what they would do to human beings.
Well, and that's exactly right, Mike. And what's so shocking about it is that the companies knew. They knew since the 60s that metal on metal was a bad idea. Why did they go after it? Because it was a $50 billion a year market if they could get younger people. But they had to have a hook. The marketeers had to have a hook, and the hook was, we don't have to wait till you're 70 to put one of these in. We can put it in when you're 30, when you're 40. You can still play golf with it.
And well, it was a scam. It was just another industry, pharmaceutical, medical device industry scam. And now
lie.
We learn, and lie, it's a huge lie. Now we're learning that the metal on metal is causing something that they describe as metallosis. Does it actually have a diagnosed name now?
It actually does. Let me tell you what the newly diagnosed name, and this is the conclusion of a recent study out in June, peer-reviewed journal that says, the introduction of modern metal-on-metal hip arthroplasty has been accompanied by a newly described disease called ALVAL, aseptic lymphocytic vasculitis-associated lesions.
And the FDA, this is what's so incredible, Ben. We think that the FDA is looking out for us. They didn't even test these damn things, and they get how many thousands of people have these in their bodies?
You know, 500,000 people now, as of 2010, over 500,000 people a year, more than that for knee implants, get total hips put in. And that's up more than 5 times from 2000. So just 10, 12 years ago, they were only putting in 100,000 of these a year. Now it's gone up 5 times, and that's because of the lie that metal on metal will wear twice as well and last twice as long. Let me tell you something that you'll find entertaining, your audience will. You know where they got that slogan? that they'll wear and be more stable and wear twice as long. They got it from an 1800s advertisement for the Calligraph typewriter. That's where the market
no, got it that doesn't market. Surprise me. It doesn't surprise me. But look, let me just jump back the little bit of I wasn't really a chemist, but you know, for what I do, I have to understand chemistry a little bit. My memory is that cobalt alone in the system, too much of it can cause blindness, deafness, peripheral neuropathies, convulsions. I mean, God, the list goes on forever. And so it would seem that somebody, some numb brain, I mean, you don't have to be a genius to understand that if you have cobalt and titanium moving through your blood or chromium, it can't be good for you.
Metal ion, there are numerous abstracts and papers, Mike, that support the notion that metal ions in the human bloodstream are not a good thing. We already have specific cases of blindness, major retinopathies and eye diseases. Several people are studying this. You know, unfortunately for these poor people, it's going to take 20 years to figure out how greatly increased their risk of cancer is. But certainly everyone has known for decades that cobalt and chromium in your bloodstream is a bad thing.
Well, the reason I want to talk to you about just today, this new article comes back. Hell, it's terrifying. I mean, if you've got this in your body, now do they have to explant the device, whether it's a knee or a hip? What, do they have to pull it out and put another one in?
They do,
what?
Mike, and then you've touched on the most insidious part of this whole thing, that the manufacturers are laughing all the way to the bank. They're laughing at the government. They're laughing at the doctors. They're laughing at the patients and at the FDA, because guess what? One of these things fails, they got a solution for you. Guess what it's called? A hip revision. They get to sell you another one, and they get paid twice or three times.
Every for the same product?
They get another one for another metal product, or in this case, if they're, you know, now they've been found out and they've been caught with their hand in the cookie jar, they can't do metal on metal, so they stick a plastic sleeve in between to supposedly protect you when they shouldn't have ever put the metal ones in the first place.
Ben, was this one of these situations where they lied to the doctors even? They weren't even honest with the doctors on clinicals?
No question, Mike, and we have seen a sea change in the attitudes of the physicians in the last 18 months. They have come 180 degrees when they now understand that the marketeers crafted this story and tricked people, including the medical community, and that it's the worst kind of marketing sin that could have been fabricated.
So if you, every case like this has really outrageous documents. There's some smoking gun. There's somebody saying stupid things. If you were to synthesize the culpability here, you were to synthesize the bad act, how would you describe it?
One word, Mike, rationalization. The message that they want to American public to swallow is that they rationalized the product, meaning that they took it off the market over a slow period of time because it wasn't selling well, that it had nothing to do with clinical safety. Meanwhile, they knew in their own journals as far back as 2007 that the devices were defective and needed to be revised, needed to be completely redesigned. And instead of recalling it in 2007 when they had this written in their journals, they waited in 2010 so they could do what? So they could rationalize the portfolio, which they call a business term. Most of us call rationalizing making up excuses for bad behavior, right?
Right.
They call it a business commercialization. That's how they rationalize the product and say that, okay, over time, we'll take it off the market because we need that time to get brand loyalty and to keep the doctors happy with our other products.
Aren't we seeing now, in whether it's a pharmaceutical, whether it's a device like this, we see that marketing decisions, MBAs, people who have no medical background at all, make marketing decisions over the safety and science decisions?
That's exactly right. And you know, unfortunately, our government, our FDA, allows that to happen.
Well, okay, so how much did this industry make selling this garbage that now we're just seeing the beginning of it, aren't we? I mean, we're just now, really, as of today with this new, I mean, we're just seeing the beginning of understanding what metallosis is and how much damage it does to the human body.
Absolutely. If we allow them to continue to run amok the way they are with marketing new revisions for the old devices that failed, then they will continue to make tens of billions of dollars per year on these hip and knee implants.
So don't they just do the economics of it and say, well, we made $10 billion in the last 2 years. we may have to pay out $1 billion or $2 billion to, for these people who have lost use of their leg, or you know, or have metallosis that has caused all kinds of illnesses such as peripheral neuropathies and deafness and blindness. So we can just write them a check and we'll still come out ahead. Isn't that kind of how they calculate?
That's exactly right. They still are refusing to take responsibility for it. Which is just cowardice.
What's the company? Tell me the most egregious company that you've seen. Let's name names.
Right now it's Johnson & Johnson. You know, we've seen them slapped in so many different fronts lately, and it's just there's a corporate culture of greed and dishonesty, and they're the parent company for DePuy. That's the worst.
I mean, we're used to seeing Bayer Corporation, we're used to seeing Pfizer, we're used to seeing Merck. It's always the same characters time and time again. Who actually sit down? I know you saw this document where they know that once they get a product on the market, they calculate that it's going to take at least 5 years, even if it's killing people, to get it off the market. So then they calculate if they can keep it on for 5 years, they do a projection of how much they can make by market need, and then they figure, well, it's going to cost us $2 billion, but we're going to make $15 billion. You've seen the documents, I guess, similar to that on this case, because I see them all the time.
No question. You know, we can't talk about some, unfortunately, for some confidentiality reasons, specific documents in this case, but it's the same old song and dance, and it's even worse because in this industry, every time a hip fails, they sell another one, and they make money again. They continue. It's self-perpetuating.
So you have clients out there right now. You have people out there that simply have been a victim again, where the FDA failed to do what they were supposed to do again. Is this one of the stories where we see the FDA, the people who were supposed to be oversight here, actually having direct ties to the industry that they're supposed to be overseeing?
Absolutely. And, you know, they sort of paid lip service to the idea that they're trying to correct their act, and had a hearing, as you probably know, a big orthopedic device hearing for 2 days just a month ago, in which they invited all the various industry, you know, I don't want to use the wrong language here, but the industry, you know.
Call them industry whores. Industry whores.
Exactly.
What they
come in. It's the same thing we've heard in every other product case where these guys come in and try to tell the FDA, tell the American public that it's not as bad as all that, and that we've got it figured out, and we're actually a responsible company.
Yeah, they actually hire scientists, we heard yesterday, they hire scientists to actually write articles that they know are a lie. Matter of fact, sometimes the scientist doesn't even write the article. They simply sign it after the industry has written it, after the industry has said what they want to say. Ben Gordon, thanks for joining me. Stay after them, man.
Thanks, Mike. Appreciate it always.
866-987-8466. I'm Mike Papantonio in for Tom Hartman. We'll be back.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Visit TomHartman.com for audio and video archives.
We're going to finish up with calls. Hold on. I'll be right back. Hold on. Mike Papantonio back for Tom. Let's get busy. Lance in Denver, are you there?
I'm here. How are you, sir?
Thank you for holding, my friend. Go ahead.
Well, Mr. Papantonio, I've just got to tell you that I've had it in listening to the constant misinformation that keeps coming from the hosts on 760. I listen to 760 here in Denver about the Mormon Church. I'm a criminal defense lawyer here in Denver. I am an excommunicated member of the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints. So it seems to me that if anyone should have an axe to grind against the Mormon Church and have no problem with hearing all of the misinformation that's being spouted out there, it would be I. But I'm tired of listening to Randy Rhodes, Nicole Sandler, who sits in for Randy sometimes. She did it last night. I couldn't get through to talk to her, but I almost drove off the road when she made one of her statements.
Lance, let me ask you this. Do you think if we're able to talk about Reverend Wright, don't you think we ought to be able to talk about a man who's running for president and maybe how his faith might dictate his decision? I don't know if you were born when John F. Kennedy ran, but that's certainly what happened. And I don't like the pushback, frankly. I don't like the pushback from people when they say, how dare you talk about it? How dare you misinform? I don't want to misinform anybody. If you want to read this, go read John Krakow, Under the Banner of Heaven. If he doesn't have it right, you probably ought to write your own book. Let me go to Wayne in Reading, Pennsylvania. Are you there?
Yep, I'm here.
Go ahead.
Hey, I had two quick points to make. First, I think that, if all the right wingers are able to talk about and analyze the religion that Obama isn't, but they say he is.
Yeah, he's Muslim. He's Kenyan Muslim. He followed Reverend Wright. But we can't talk about it, man, because it's misinformation. Go ahead.
Right. So, if they're able to talk about the religion that he isn't and blame him for it, then we certainly ought to be able to talk about the religion that the Republican candidate is.
Isn't there the issue, Wayne, that it might dictate decision making? I mean, factor?
Absolutely. And that was actually my other point I wanted to make was I think it's completely relevant because if, he believes in tenets of faith that say that it's okay to lie to people, what's gonna happen the first time he gets caught in a bold-faced lie?
He already has been caught in a
government.
Yeah, he already has been caught in a lie. And the lie is, why won't you give us your taxes? And the lie is, there's nothing wrong. Why do you ask for my taxes? The lie is, I haven't done anything wrong. The lie is that, I haven't done anything wrong and you don't have the right to find out. That's the lie. We're already seeing the lie. In a nice way, they said this is the Etch-a-Sketch. This is the Etch-a-Sketch candidate. That's really putting it nicely, because I would call him, the more I'm finding out about both his history and the history that he won't tell us about, the easier it is for me to conclude that we're dealing with a criminal. Okay? Now, that's how strongly I feel about it. I feel like we're dealing with a criminal who's running for president of the United States. And you know what? With me, nothing is off the table. It is our right to have these discussions, and I'm going to continue having them. Robert in Palm Springs, are you there?
Hi, Mike. Such an honor to talk to you, first of all.
Well, thanks.
What I wanted to point out, because you were talking about Mormonism, what I wanted to say is that I think that we should fear both Mormonism and Scientology, which are the two male-dominated religions that were actually founded in the United States. And the reason I fear them is they represent the worst aspects of the American character. They embody paranoia, they're extremely controlling, and they're hyper-capitalistic.
Well, I mean, here's where I land on this whole thing. Again, I'm a Methodist. I've been raised in the Methodist church. But I'm not offended when somebody says, now, tell me more about Wesley. Tell me more about John Wesley. Why do you believe that? Because if I were running for president, I would think people would ask me that question. And I don't want to be shouted down. And I don't want Randy Rhodes to be shouted down, or Tom Hartman, or Ed Schultz, or anybody who might be asking the tough questions. And that is, why in the hell aren't we able to talk about the religion of the man who's running to run the free world, you see? And I won't be shouted down because it's an important part of the discussion. I wasn't offended, if you want to know the truth, when they talked about Reverend Wright and his connection to Obama. That's fair game. I wasn't offended. It was ridiculous, but it was fair game. I wasn't offended even when they started trying to make Obama Muslim, because we knew the truth there. We weren't offended by that. It's their right to have a discussion like that. This is a big, big decision. It's the same kind of decision we ought to have information about where it comes to his taxes. Why in the hell is he hiding this information? Does it tie into El Salvador blood money that started Bain Capital? Does it tie into the $102 million that's in his IRA that he put there in 15 years? You do the math. It's impossible. It can be done, but you really have to stretch some laws to do it. Does it have to do with the shell games that he's paying that he's playing with offshore banks, where he moves money around in a way that we don't know where it is, in places where graft and bribery determine the regulations? Those are questions that every progressive should be asking this man who wants to be president of the United States and won't even give us his damn tax returns. So we will talk about those issues. Diane in Lagoa Beach.
Okay, can you hear me?
Yeah.
Hello? Okay.
Real quick. Well, hey, Diane, I'm told I got 30 seconds. What is it?
Okay. Well, I feel that the progressive media, I'm going to skip some of this, has failed us when it comes to giving a voice of truly progressive Jews and Christians when they're critical of the statement of the Palestinians.
Please listen in. We won't do that. I've got 35 seconds. I want to say this. That's it for today's show. Thank you for hanging on as callers. And now get out there. Get active. Occupy something. And as Tom would say, tag, you're it. We've done all we can do in these last 3 hours. But I'll be back tomorrow. I'm Mike Papantonio in for Tom Hartman. Follow me on Twitter, Ring of Fire Radio.
Been listening to Tom Hartman. For audio and video archives, go to TomHartman.com.